Okay, so diving right in today, we're looking at a case that really gets at this tension, the one between what the public has a right to know and what we as individuals can expect to keep private, and particularly when there's, a criminal case going on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's such a tricky balance to strike, right? Like, where do we draw the line?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the case that you all sent in that really brings this to light is Post Newsweek Stations v. Doe. And, it's fascinating because it deals with court records, specifically like when details from a criminal investigation end up in court documents, through discovery and stuff, who gets to see them then? Like, what happens to the privacy of the people named in those documents, especially if they're not the ones actually being charged with the crime?
Exactly. And you know what's really interesting is the specific case, it all started with a prostitution sting, back in Broward County. It involved Kathy and Jeffrey Willits. They were running this whole operation. And back in July of 91, the authorities, they seized a bunch of stuff as part of their investigation. Things like client lists. Those are our John Does in this situation, and even recorded phone conversations. Wow, a lot of information there. And naturally, the Willits being the defendants, they wanted access to all that evidence to prepare their defense. I mean, that's pretty standard in a criminal case,
Yeah,
right?
definitely. Like, you got to know what they've got on you.
Exactly. And that's where Florida Rule of Criminal Procedure 3.220 comes into play. This rule, it sets out the whole process for exchanging information between the prosecution and the defense, what we call discovery, right? And the Willits, as defendants, they had the right to see the evidence the state had against them. But here's where things get really interesting. And this is super important for, anyone interested in her privacy rights work, because those John Does, the people whose names were on those client lists, they tried to intervene. They wanted to stop the public disclosure of this information. They were like, hey, this is a huge violation of our privacy.
So that's like a separate legal battle, almost like within the main case.
Exactly. It's kind of a case within a case.
Right.
And the trial court, their initial decision on this was pretty straightforward. They basically said once those client names and addresses were shared with the Willits as part of discovery, it became public record and there were no privacy protections in this context.
Oh, wow. So just like that, it's public.
Yeah, it's kind of a bold statement, right?
Yeah.
And naturally, you can guess what happened next. A bunch of media organizations, like Post Newsweek, the Miami Herald and others jumped on this. They were like, hey, we want access to these records. And they were citing Florida's public records law, which, generally favors open government.
Right, of course.
So the trial court said, go ahead, allowed the disclosure, and then the appellate court agreed with that decision.
But I'm guessing that wasn't the end of it.
You guessed right.
Yeah.
The John Does, they weren't giving up. They kept fighting the disclosure and the media. They were really interested in this whole thing.
Right.
So it ended up going all the way to the Florida Supreme Court.
Wow. Okay, so high stakes now.
Exactly. And it was the perfect case for them to really grapple with, this fundamental conflict between the public's right to know and an individual's right to privacy within our legal system.
Gotcha. Okay, so to understand this clash, like where it all comes from, legally speaking, we need to break down Florida's public records law, right? It's chapter 119, I think you said.
Yeah, that's the one. So basically, Chapter 119, it starts with this strong presumption of openness when it comes to government records in Florida. The idea is that the public has a right to see what their government is up to, what kind of information they're collecting, all that. It's all about transparency and accountability, making sure the government's actions are open to scrutiny.
That makes sense.
So that's one side of the equation. And then we have Florida Rule of Criminal Procedure 3.220, specifically subsection. Now, this one is really important for understanding how people who aren't the actual defendants can get involved,
Okay, so this is where the John Does come in.
Exactly. So 3.220 meters, it basically says that any person, not just the defendants, can ask the court to prevent or, at least regulate the release of information that came up during discovery. So even though the John Does weren't facing criminal charges in the Willits case, this rule gave them the right to try and block their names from being made public.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So they had a legal way to fight back.
Right, they did. And their main argument, the basis of their whole challenge rested on their constitutional right to privacy. It's specifically under the Florida Constitution, Article 1, Section 23. And they were saying that making their names and addresses public, especially in connection with a prostitution investigation, would be like a massive invasion of their privacy.
Yeah, I could see that.
So you can see the core tension here, right? On one hand, you have the public's right to access court records, which came about through the discovery process. And on the other hand, you have the John Does claiming their constitutional right to privacy as individuals who aren't facing charges themselves.
Okay, so it's real head-to-head between two important rights.
Exactly. And in these situations, legal precedents, you know, past cases that have already been decided, they become super important because they guide how courts make decisions.
Right.
And there are two big ones that the Florida Supreme Court would have considered in this case. The first one is Miami Herald Publishing Co. v. Lewis. This case really cemented the idea that in Florida, there's a strong presumption of public access to court records.
Okay.
It basically says that what goes on in the court should generally be open for the public to see. It's all about transparency and keeping the public confident in how justice is carried out. The second case is Barron v. Florida Freedom Newspapers, Inc. Now, this one is even more relevant to our case because it lays out a specific test, a three-part test, actually, that courts use to figure out if and when restricting public access is justified.
Okay, a three-part test. So this is getting pretty specific.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
And understanding this test is super helpful. So let me break it down for our listeners. The first part of the Barron test, the court looks at the nature of the criminal activity involved. Hmm. You know, is this something that's really important for the public to know about? Or is it more like a minor thing, not as newsworthy?
Mm-hmm.
The second part, they look at how sensitive the information is that someone wants to keep private. Like, does it involve very personal stuff that could really hurt someone's reputation or cause them harm if it gets out?
Yeah.
And the third part of the test is about whether there are any ways to limit the disclosure of the information and whether those measures are good enough. You know, things like doing an in-camera review, which means the judge looks at the documents privately to see if anything can be redacted to protect sensitive information.
Okay, so it's a pretty thorough test.
Yeah, it tries to be pretty balanced, you know, weighing different factors.
Right.
So with all that legal background in mind, let's get to the Florida Supreme Court's decision in Post Newsweek v. Doe. What did they actually decide? Well, they ended up siding with the media organizations.
Okay, so the John Does didn't win.
No, they didn't. The court basically said that in this specific situation, the John Does didn't have a strong enough privacy interest in their names and addresses, especially once that information had been given to the Willetts, you know, as part of the discovery process.
Okay.
So they ruled that letting the public access this information was fine. It fit with Florida's public records law.
Wow. So pretty decisive, huh?
Yeah, it was. And understanding why they reached that decision is really important. The court looked at the privacy question really closely, and both the trial court and the Supreme Court, they basically concluded that if you're involved as a client in a prostitution ring, you can't really expect your name to stay secret, especially when there's a criminal investigation going on.
Right. It's kind of like you're part of the story now.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this legal principle that sort of sums it up. You can't claim privacy in your role in a crime.
Okay, so that's pretty straightforward.
It is, but what about Rule 3.22-a-meters? You know, the one we talked about that gave the John Does the right to try and block the disclosure? Why didn't that help them in the end?
Right, yeah, good question.
So while that rule does give anyone the right to challenge disclosure, the court basically said that in this case, the John Does just didn't show a strong enough reason, a strong enough privacy interest, or another legal reason, you know, that would be more important than the public's right to access this information.
So it's not just about having the right to make the argument, it's also about how strong your argument is.
Exactly. You got to convince the court, you know, and the court felt that their privacy argument just wasn't strong enough in this particular situation.
Okay. And I remember you mentioned how important Florida's public policy is when it comes to open access to court stuff.
Oh, yeah. Huge. It's like a core principle in Florida law. The idea is that if people can see what's going on in the courts, it builds trust and makes sure everyone is accountable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime someone wants to restrict that access, they have to have a really good reason.
Okay.
And the fact that the discovery documents had already been given to the Willetts, the defendants, you know, that played a big role in the court's decision, too. They were basically like, well, once the defendant has it, it's pretty much public anyway.
Makes sense.
It's a really important point for anyone listening who, you know, wants to understand the rules around public access and legal cases.
Okay, so the documents being shared with the defendant was like a turning point.
Exactly. Once that happened, it was harder to argue that they should stay secret.
Okay, and we talked about those earlier cases, Lewis and Barron.
Yeah.
How did those affect the court's decision in Post Newsweek?
Oh, they were like the foundation. The court went back to that Lewis case, which, you know, really established that broad right of public access to court records. And then they used the Barron test, that three-part test we talked about, to look at the specifics of this case. And they basically concluded that the John Does, they hadn't shown any substantial harm, you know, any real significant damage that would justify blocking public access to their names and addresses. Especially given that, you know, they were clients of a prostitution ring. The nature of the activity itself weighed heavily in the court's decision.
So the specifics of what happened in the case really mattered.
Oh, absolutely. And one more thing about the process. It's worth noting that the trial judge did something called an in-camera review before allowing the information to be released. And the Supreme Court saw that as a good enough safeguard, you know, a procedural way to protect sensitive information.
Okay, so the judge had already looked for anything super sensitive.
Exactly. The judge basically went through the materials privately and decided that nothing was so sensitive that it had to be kept from the public. And the Supreme Court agreed with that assessment.
Oh, yeah.
So that kind of strengthened the case for disclosure.
Right. You can see how each piece kind of builds on the one before.
Exactly. It's all connected.
Yeah. But it's interesting. You know, it wasn't a totally unanimous decision by the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Right? There were different opinions, like the one from Chief Justice Barquette and the dissent from Justice Kogan. They didn't completely agree with the majority.
Yeah, they brought up some really important points that show just how complex this whole balancing act is, you know, between transparency and privacy. So Chief Justice Barquette, even though she ultimately agreed with the outcome, she wrote a separate opinion, you know, a concurrence, where she really stressed how important it is to carefully weigh privacy rights against the public's right to information.
Okay, so she was like, yeah, I agree, but let's not forget about privacy.
Exactly. She's saying privacy is still super important and courts need to keep thinking about these things carefully, even in cases like this where, you know, the privacy claims didn't win out in the end.
Right.
And then you have Justice Kogan. His dissent was really interesting. He was more on the side of the John Does, yeah. You know. He was worried about the potential harm to people's reputations and dignity just because their names were mentioned in discovery documents, even if they hadn't been charged with anything.
Mm-hmm.
His point was that releasing this information was basically like the state branding these people as criminals without giving them a chance to defend themselves in court, you know, without due process.
Yeah, that's a really powerful argument.
It is. And he asked a really important question. Is it fair to expose people just because their name appears in some document somewhere? It's a tough question, you know?
Not really.
It really makes you think. It does.
Okay, so we've got these different viewpoints, and it just shows how tricky it is to balance these fundamental rights.
Totally. And this isn't just some abstract legal debate, you know? It has real consequences for people's lives. And for those of you listening, especially the law students out there, there are some really important takeaways from this case. First off, it's clear that in Florida, once discovery materials are given to the defense in a criminal case, they're generally considered public records.
Okay.
That's like a starting point. And second, even though people who aren't part of the main case, they can try to challenge the release of this information using that rule 3.2 durometers, it's a tough battle. They have to show a really strong, legally valid reason, either for their privacy or some other interest that's more important than the public's right to know.
So the bar is set pretty high.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And as we talked about that Barron test, that three-part test, it gives the courts a framework to evaluate these challenges. And showing that there would be substantial harm if the information gets out, that's a key part of winning that argument.
Gotcha.
And this whole case, it really highlights the constant tug of war in our legal system between transparency, you know, open government, and protecting individual privacy. It's a balance that courts are always trying to find.
It's definitely not easy. Nope.
And it's interesting to think about how this case from 1992 in post-Newsweek, how it applies today in our digital world. We have so much personal data floating around online, and it can end up being revealed through subpoenas or leaks. You know, think about things like those OnlyFans subpoenas or the Epstein client lists. It makes you wonder how those principles from back then apply to these new situations.
There's like a whole new level of information out there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the core issues from post-Newsweek, they're still relevant. How do courts balance these competing interests when we have this massive amount of personal data that could become part of a legal case? It's a big question for the legal field moving forward, you know?
Absolutely. So to sum up our deep dive today for everyone, we've been looking at this fundamental tension between the public's right to access court records and individual privacy, especially when it involves people who aren't even directly charged with a crime.
Right. And the big takeaway is that in Florida, the law really favors openness. You know, if you want to restrict access to that information, you need a really strong legal argument, especially when it's connected to some kind of criminal activity.
Okay, so the default is pretty much openness.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, and to leave everyone with something to think about, consider this. How do those principles from Post Newsweek vs. Do you know that case from 92? Mm-hmm. How do they apply in our world today, where so much of our personal information is collected and could potentially be used in legal cases? How would courts today balance these competing interests, given all the changes in technology and how our views on privacy have evolved? It's amazing to think that this case still raises such important questions about who has the right to know what and why that even matters in a society like ours. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, everyone.
Absolutely. It's a fascinating case for sure.
It really is.
Yeah, and thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for coming on.